Hi, this is Tiffany the Last.
I'm Pirate Nick.
And we're here with Alan Garth of the San Diego Record Show. Hi, Alan.
Hi.
Took it away. You leave me nothing and then make me pay.
So, can you tell our listeners how and why you started the San Diego Record Show?
Actually, I didn't start it. I took over in about 2001. I used to go to the record show when it was in El Cajon. That was when Marvin and Larry used to do it, a couple guys that did it, and it was small. After talking to them, they started it in someone's backyard in I think it was 89. I wasn't into records really at that time. Then later, about 97-ish, I'd say, I started going, and it was in a church in El Cajon auditorium. Then they moved it to Hillcrest. And then they stopped doing it around 2000, and it had like a lull, you know. And so I was asking around and seeing if there was any interest still. And I had a good friend urging me, his name is Anthony Pearson, he's a record dealer from LA, to do it, to take over basically. There was still a demand. So I called those guys and said, hey, I was thinking about doing this, you know, is that all right? It's been kind of done with for a while. And they were like, yeah, go for it. So that was it. That's where I took over. As far as why, a lot of reasons, but mainly just to keep it going and hopefully get some decent records out of it. And I do sell at the shows as well. So, I have a booth at my show. And without the show, none of that could happen. So I just had to keep it going, basically.
So you're a collector also, it sounds like.
Yeah, and a DJ rarely. Livewire this Monday.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But that's rare. I like DJing and stuff, but I'm a little guilty of not keeping up with current releases, you know, and I like to play what I like to play, and it's definitely a certain audience. So I play when I'm invited.
Yeah.
And people kind of know what I play and invite me occasionally. But yeah, I'm a collector and a dealer. Second. Mainly I find records cheap if possible. Like I go to thrift stores, swap meets every day, and get them home. If I like them, I keep them. If I don't like them, I put them in a pile to be later like looked up for value or cleaned or priced, traded sometimes if it's something someone else wants, you know, stuff like that. And from doing that over the years, I've acquired like 10,000 or more.
Wow.
Records.
Jeez.
But recently, I've decided that's way too many, and I never listen to them all. I mean, it's impossible.
Yeah.
With how many days there are in a year. You'd have to play a lot anyway. And I'm trying to get rid of them, a lot of them. I want to get down to one shelf, like just the ones that are in my room. Is like good goal, personal goal.
In today's environment of digital media, so
right.
You got, you know, CDs, you got MP3s. Why records for you?
I have a lot of MP3s and CDs actually as well. I like records for a lot of reasons. From the smell of them, the feel and the sound is warmer. A lot of people can't hear it. Unless you play them back to back, a CD versus a record, but they are. There's a difference in the sound, analog versus digital. There's bound to be some sort of difference. And to me, that matters. A lot of people, it doesn't. So, you know, it's just me with that, and, you know, the record collectors will all agree, I'm sure. But I do get a ton of MP3s, you know, when I can. I'm probably going to buy Serato, which is a program a lot of DJs are using. Without getting into too much detail, I'm sure DJs will recognize the name. And basically, you can play MP3s via a record that is provided. It's a digital record, kind of. But it looks just like a normal record. And when you rewind the record, it will rewind the MP3. It's really incredible the way technology is going. That would basically allow a DJ to play any song that or not even a song. It could be a theme from a TV show, any MP3 in a club, you know. So he can take requests on the spot if he has a cell phone or a BlackBerry where he can download the music. He could take a request and play it 10 minutes later and really only show up with one bag, you know.
Wow.
And that's cool. A lot of people are, like, afraid of it. A lot of DJs won't ever convert, but I probably will. But I'm still going to keep my records, you know. I think that Serato is sort of a crutch, kind of. And a lot of people are buying it who don't even have records. Probably never even bought a record, and they're going out and getting Serato. So it's kind of a weird time right now.
Can you put your record onto an MP3?
Yeah. Yeah, I can just record via computer software.
And
I use Pro Tools.
Is there a sound difference in that?
No, actually an MP3 of a record still sounds like a record.
Uh-huh.
Really?
Yeah. For the most part. MP3 isn't the best sound format, really. Yeah. I mean, I try to not compress them if possible, but there's only so much hard drive space for AIF, you know, whatever. Yeah.
Is it hard to find some of the artists that you like on record? Or can you find almost anything on vinyl as well as anything that's released on CD? Can you find it on vinyl as well?
No, that's not... current music... Well, yeah, they're still pressing a lot of it. A lot of especially the club, the top 40 club music, there's always like a 12-inch or an LP. But
for the DJs?
Yeah, for the DJs, yeah. And collectors. I mean, you know, I'm trying to think of any groups. None come to mind, but, like She Wants Revenge. When I was up at the record store, we had the full length there, and it was great. You know, I didn't know they made it. I thought it was just CD. You know, I know a ton of companies are still pressing records, but I think mainly the people that are buying them now are collectors and DJs. Whereas before, it was the only available format all through the 70s and into the early 80s. There was nothing else, and people bought records, and that was it. That was, you know, now there's options. You go in, and you got records, CDs. Well, not so much tapes anymore. Those are kind of done with. But and now MP3s. I mean, now people don't really even have to go out, which I think takes some of the fun out of it. I mean, I really do. I rode my bike. The Off the Record used to be in this block, maybe the next block up, and the old location. And I used to live in La Mesa there, and I rode my bike, you know, however far it is, 20 miles each way,
wow,
to get a 12-inch Rapper's Delight. It was like it was like the first record. The first record I bought was Run DMC in 1984 when it came out, when I was like a breaker. And then a bunch of time went by, and I didn't buy records. I just had a ton of mixtapes and stuff. But then, I don't know what it was, I just caught the bug again, and it was that record. It was Rapper's Delight. And I called them, and they had the 12-inch. It was $10. I rode all the way and got it and put it in my backpack and came home. And that was it. That from then on, I was like, I'm sick now. I'm like, I got to have records.
Yeah, it is sad in a way, because, you know, like you said, the smell of the vinyl. And, you know, you lose this whole tangible...
Yeah,
relationship with the music when you're buying it on iTunes or whatever.
I think you do. Yeah, and I was noticing that a lot. I was just thinking how even with CDs I would be excited to get them. It's part of it is going to the record store and looking at it, holding it. I mean,
the artwork,
yeah, and then getting it out of the store and opening it and putting it in and all the anticipation or whatever. And I don't get that when I download. I mean, I'll download a whole album and I'll be kind of stoked that I got it, I guess, but it's not the same feeling. It's just not. And I don't know how to get that from digital, from downloading. Like, I don't know if it's ever going to be that way. Luckily, I know it. I know the feeling from before. The future generations, I don't know.
It might be disposable to them.
Yeah, you wonder how it's going to affect their relationship with the music.
It almost seems like people care less about music today than ever. And maybe not ever, but at least than even 10 years ago, you know, when I was just started buying records. And now, you know, I don't know. I don't know. It just seems like it's like so easy to get. It's almost disposable. And
yeah,
people don't really... I used to play the same song over and over if I liked it, all day in my car, you know, or wherever. Like, if I got stuck on a song, I'd be like, yes, this is the best ever. And I'm sure that still happens, but I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, Alan, going way back, my dad has told me some stories about one of his friends who had this old Rivi, and he would drive it really slow and take his record player in it so they could cruise around with their music. And I was just wondering, do you think that the change from vinyl to 8-track was that so that people could take their music with them, more mobile?
Yes, yeah, I do. I think it was a push for easier... I think it's mostly the record companies were pushing for a better format. I don't think they got it with 8-tracks. Mm-hmm. I think that's 8-tracks didn't really last that long before cassettes came out. You used to have to flip 8-tracks over in the middle of the song because of that's the nature of an 8-track. And, you know, that's probably why they didn't last as long as they did. But I remember Chrysler had a record player that came in one of their cars.
Oh, really?
I've never seen one in person, but I've heard about them, and I can't imagine... it worked all that great. I mean, unless the roads were smooth, you know. And I think that's probably what led, you know, people wanted to listen in their cars, listen outside of the house, uh-huh. You know, listen. Records are, you know, you got to have the record player, the amplifier. I mean, although there are portable record players, but yeah, portability. And then from there, CDs, and now, of course, iPods and everything.
Yeah.
All right, so getting back to the show, the record show that you produce, you know, talk about the different sizes of records that are out there. What's popular? What are the main records being traded at your shows?
12-inch LPs are by far the most predominant. There are 7-inches as well, 45s. There's some, I mean, people call 7-inches 7-inches. It's the same as a 45, but some 7-inches actually play at 33, and they have a small hole in the middle, and most 45s, all 45s play at 45, uh-huh. And they have a large hole, usually. But that's neither here nor there. Both of those are at the show. 10-inches are there, but 10-inches, like at 33 RPM, they're not very, they're kind of novelty. You don't see too many of those. Certain groups will do it just because it's an option, but doesn't hold as much music. Like, it's more like an EP. No real tapes or CDs. I mean, a few, but I try to encourage the vendors just to bring like records, and it's mostly 45s and LPs.
All right. So at the show, how many vendors do you usually have, and what does it take for a vendor to get into your show?
It's about 30 vendors, and it fills up quick. It's basically just first come, first serve. Just ask me. And it costs, depending on the table size you get, about $40.
And is there any of your vendors that are just like, oh, I've got the big seller this time? Is there a competition or anything between them?
There are always a few vendors who work really hard between the shows, and they do really well.
Uh-huh.
And... there's vendors who do it just to do it. I mean, I've had vendors tell me that they love doing it because it's just fun. Mm-hmm. They like to be out there and meet people. And I always go around and I'm like, how'd you do today? And, you know, everyone always has positive feedback. And I know that some of them make more money than others, but they're all happy just to be doing it. And that's great, because if that were to ever change, it would just kill the show. I mean, the show is really about the vendors, mm-hmm. and the people that help me, my door guy and people that help me set it up and stuff like that, because you know, I'm just one guy with one table, and I only have what I have, and
yeah.
if I don't have it, hopefully they can find it at another table.
Is there sometimes like a buzz around the show, like someone has something really like hard to find? Yeah, like
there's always a score of the day.
A score. Okay.
That is usually a vendor who has a record that he doesn't know what it's worth and sells it to somebody, and then the word gets out, like, oh, did you hear somebody got so and such and such today? But it's not loud enough to where the vendor could hear it.
So we don't want to give any titles, huh?
Well, you know, and I mean, I'm sure it's even happened to me. I mean, it happens. You can't know everything, mm-hmm. or if you do, oh, you're awesome, but yeah. It's really hard, I mean, I would think. And a lot of vendors have records that they just want to blow out. And it's cool if someone gets lucky. As far as I'm concerned, that's the whole nature of the show. If you have to go there and pay hundreds of dollars, you might as well just go to eBay or something. I mean, you know what I mean? The show is about the grassroots type of stuff.
And do most of them take cash?
It's all cash. Yeah, it's all cash. I should have some sort of credit thing because one of the most commonly asked questions is there an ATM around here? And the only one is in 7-Eleven, and they charge, you know, whatever if it's not your bank. So an ATM credit machine would be nice, but I don't know if that's ever going to happen.
How often do you have your shows?
It's 4 times a year currently. It used to be 3 times a year, and I picked it up a little bit once more. The only reason I really don't go every month is because I want fresh stock. I don't want people. I think San Diego is so small that it would be a repeat a lot of the same stuff. At least that's what I'm afraid of. There's one in LA that's every month.
Wow.
And I go up there, but it's bigger. It's like twice as big as mine. It's a great show, you know, and I'm sure he works just as hard as I do, if not harder. But LA is bigger city, you know, you can expect that, and it's an entertainment mecca.
This
is, San Diego is cool in its own right, but if I were to do it every month, I think it might be a little watered down, so I space it out to try to keep it top notch.
Does your show focus on any specific genres, or is it wide open?
It is not genre specific by any means, because I don't have any control over what the vendors are going to bring. I have noticed that it is the stuff that sells the best is rock, funk, and jazz, and soul, and hip hop. I don't get too many requests for like country or classical. They do come occasionally, and that doesn't mean that they're not going to be found at the show. That stuff might be there. But the majority of the stuff people buy, I see, are like common titles, like rock, Led Zeppelin, and stuff like that. I mean, classics. And then, you know, rare stuff, too. I mean, there's always people looking for the not-so-seldom-seen records. But it usually falls in the same genre, like rock, jazz, soul from 60s to 70s and 80s. Records in the 50s were... I mean, I think the LP really only came around in the 50s. Before that, it was like 78s, mostly. And I'm not sure how much 50s stuff there really is there. It's mostly 60s and 70s. But there is. There is everything.
At your record shows, at the door, you know, are people lining up when the doors open to run to the vendors to try and score the best buy?
Yeah, basically what it is there's an early bird admission that costs more. That is something that I didn't start. I kind of copied it. I think all the record shows do that. And I think what started that was diehard collectors showing up at the crack of dawn before the sun even comes up with flashlights. Literally, I've heard these stories. And digging through the vendor stock before they even unloaded it from the car. And it's depending on the vendor, it's a little intrusive if you're trying to unload and, you know, be out of people's way. So I think people started this early bird, and it kind of gives them, you know, if people want to dig that bad, then they can get in the early bird. It's a half an hour ahead of time. And that is where the rush is. Like, if you show up at 8:30, you'll see a line of early birds, like, around the corner usually. And they get in and just run to wherever they're going. They seem to know where they're going, and then they like just start digging like crazy, and then it kind of just slows down, and it goes down to a cheaper admission after 9.
Do they have any kind of technique, like a certain shuffle?
I've seen guys, you know, do the two hand, like one hand in each box, and you know they're going, but you kind of have to look, you know. And yeah, I mean, I'm sure everyone kind of has their techniques. I don't do the one hand in each box. I just do one box at a time, but I'm fast. And it's gotten to the point, too, for me anyway, and I'm sure a lot of other collectors, you just see the same records over and over, and when you see one that you haven't seen, it stands out, like, you know. And those are the ones you'll stop and look at, whether it's the artwork or, you know, or just a group you've never heard of. But going to swap meets and thrift stores over and over and over, you just see a lot of the common titles because they were hits. You know, that's great music and stuff, but you can only have so many copies of those records. And then something that you've never seen before jumps out, and then that's like, that's when the alarm goes off to this could be good.
The adrenaline starts going.
Yeah. And I have a portable record player that I carry with me. It's in the truck. And so it's battery operated, so I can listen wherever I'm at. Someone else is gonna take your place for losing me. Oh, baby, you're losing me. Can you see what you're doing? Yeah, you're losing me. Oh, baby, yeah, you're losing me. Oh, baby, yeah. We used to have a good thing going, nobody but you and me. My evil love is born. I'm gonna have to set you free. I gotta get me a man to take care of business better than you do. Your cheating and lying got the best of me. I'm gonna get the best of you.
Back to your collection. You said you had about 10,000. What's the most valuable, or what do you think is the most valuable? Do you not want to give up, or?
That's really hard because a lot of my records that aren't worth a lot. Money-wise, or great content-wise, it all depends on value, what you consider value. I have some high-dollar records that I don't even listen to, and I might sell them soon, you know, and I lucked out and got them cheap, hopefully, and I think. It depends on the record. Some of them I paid for, but like a jazz record that comes to mind, I got cheap, and I got it home and looked it up, and it's 300-ish.
Whoa.
But in the spectrum of records, that's not worth that much.
Really?
When you're talking about like the Velvet Underground acetates, that's going for like ridiculous amounts of money. And it's relative, you know. And most of my searching is California-based. If I were to go to, I mean, I've done some digging in Europe and outside of California, but there's a whole other world of records that exists. And in my stuff, you know, I like, there's just people that have way better collections than me. I mean, there's like so many good records that exist. Mm-hmm. It's impossible. And I may have that many in my collection, but I can't listen to all those. Like, a lot of those records I take to the show to sell, and I'll empty a few boxes, and then they'll come back to the house, and then next time I do a show, some of them will go, and I'll take some new ones. So my stock is kind of in a constant state of change. So it's hard for me to say, like, what's my most valuable record or what's my favorite record. The stuff I'm usually playing is my most recent finds. Like, the stuff I got last weekend at the swap meet, I'm listening to right now. Until next week when I go to the swap meet and get new stuff to listen to. And like, doing that over and over, there's records that are buried now that I haven't played for, like, years, but they're still my favorite. They're still, like, really good records, you know. And as far as value, it's really hard. I've seen records go for a lot of money that I listen to, and I'm not into content-wise. Like, and in fact, I'm like, why is this worth that much money? Like, a lot of times. I'm like a lot of 80s records, records you wouldn't even think are valuable are.
Like, what's a title?
Well, there's a group from San Diego, they were called High Five, and they had a record out in the 80s, and it's not like a $100 record, but it's 50 to 100 every time. Whoa. And the group is Chargers guys, and they put out a record, and it's like that kind of thing. I mean, it's rare, and it's novel for what it is, so you would think it's worth something, but, I mean, $100, I mean, that's kind of, I wouldn't think $100, but people want to pay it, so they, you know, they pay. I don't question it, and I've listed records like the same way. I put up a record by a group called Shock, and it was from the 80s, and it's like modern soul R&B record, and I thought it would go for like $20, and it ended up going for like $240. And I listened to it again before I shipped it off, just to make sure, like, what. And no, it's good. It's good. So I don't question, you know. No. Hey, he's probably stoked, and I'm stoked, and it works out for everyone that way.
So what makes a record rare? What makes it desirable in the collector's world?
Usually it's, they didn't press very many. But that's not always the case. Like, if a record has been sampled by some hip-hop act, it usually will go up in value. Then there will be less and less on the market, and it just continues to go up until they'll either reissue it or someone will bootleg it, which will bring the value back down. But there's still people that look for the original, still, the collectors and stuff like that. But most of like the really rare records that are just sell for a lot over and over, regardless of sample or not, are records that weren't pressed very, you know, in very high quantity, 500 or less, you know.
So they're usually really obscure artists?
Yeah, and a lot of that's actually kind of what I'm currently into is private private label records, private pressing, singer-songwriter stuff that is probably pressed with their own money. You know, you look at the record label and you don't recognize it, and it's some obscure label out of Ontario or just some small city, Merced. A lot of it comes from California, a lot of my stuff anyway. And it's great, I think, a lot of it, content-wise. I mean, it's just as good as any, you know, well-produced in the limelight band of the same era, but it's just they didn't have the money to do it, or the label didn't believe in them enough to sign them and give them an advance, and so they did it anyway. And those are never pressed in large quantities, usually, because there's just not enough money for the artist. Yeah. It's all coming from the artist. And it, or his family, or you know.
That must be a great benefit of doing what you do, because you get to hear bands that you'd never hear elsewhere, because they're not going to be on CD, they're not going to be on iTunes.
Yeah, and that is the appeal of the records also, and is that a lot of this stuff is not ever going to make it to CD, and a lot of times, that's why I think records are cool too, is because it's you can collect anything, really, stamps or coins, baseball cards, and they got conventions for all of them. But I like records because it's someone's heart and soul on a recording. And at that point in time, that's how they felt, and it's a record of it, you know, and that's just so cool. And it's tells a story, you know. It's, to me, it's so much more than a coin. I mean, coins are cool. Yeah. I don't want to get hate mail now from coin collectors, but it's different to me, you know, and that's why I do the record show. And yeah, it that stuff just won't ever be on CD unless that artist is still alive and puts it on CD themselves, or they find a label that believes in them to reissue it, you know, stuff like that.
I guess my final question to you is, owning as many records as you do, what is the best way to store a record?
I have shelves. A lot of people use the IKEA Expedit. It's the most popular record shelf that I know of, and it's if you go to IKEA, you can't miss it. It's up. It's called the Expedit. I don't know how to spell it. Expedit or something like that. Yeah, and it's just boxes, cubicles, and they happen to fit records just perfectly. And as far as anything else, I mean, I just keep them on a shelf out of the sun, mm-hmm. out of the heat, you know.
Plastic on or plastic off?
I like plastic sleeves. Some people don't, though. Some people, they really are bothered by those. I got a buddy who can't stand those, and he comes to my house and takes them off. I think they serve a purpose, you know, preserve the record. That's how I store them.
So would you mind giving us a pirate R?
Arg! Is that any good?
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Thank you.